everyone. Welcome back to our 11th episode of Behind the Science of Career Development. This is your host, Dr. Brian Hutchison, also known as the Global Career Guy. And I am super excited with this program and the direction we're headed and my guests today. So if you're a first-time listener to Behind the Science of Career Development, the goal of this podcast, first of all, it represents the Asia-Pacific Career Development Association and our journal, of which I'm editor, APCDJ. But we're really trying to find the problems of practice in the field of career development and bring on experts and new voices into the conversation so that we can all improve our practice as one global learning community. So one of the issues that I've been thinking a lot about lately is international students, mostly from the Asia Pacific region to other countries and thinking specifically about Western countries. In fact, what brought that to my mind was the lead article in our issue of APCDJ that just came out. It's called Career Considerations When Working with Chinese International Students. Now, I've been fortunate enough to have two amazing Chinese international students who are much further along in their careers than when I had them. And so I've brought them on for us to have a conversation today. I'd like to start by introducing Dr. Yang Ai, who is an assistant professor at the University of the Redlands in California here in the USA. Dr. Ai, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you, Dr. H?
I'm very good. So my old students all call me Dr. H, so you're probably going to hear a little bit of that in this episode. Yang, is it okay if I call you Yang?
Oh, of course.
Great. So give us a short introduction of yourself.
Hello, Dr. H. Hello, Hongshan, everyone. My name is Yang Ai. Now I'm an assistant professor of school and college counseling at the University of Rutlands. So it's really my pleasure to be here and glad to see you all.
And your research, as we know from all of our conversations, really focuses on international students quite a bit. Can you talk a little bit about your interest in that as an academic research area and some of the work that you've been doing?
So international student population, especially Asian international student population, is always one of my main research trajectories. I mean, part of it because my personal experiences as a Asian international students in the US. So like my dissertation, I was studying the, you know, career decision-making self-advocacy in Asian international students, which is always my passions located at.
Yeah. Great. And joining us, and the two of you know each other well, is Ms. Hongshan Shao, who is currently a doctoral student at Penn State University, who, if a little bird told me correctly, just passed her comprehensive exams today. And so you might recognize her name if you're a reader of the journal, because she is the sole author of our lead article, again, called Career Considerations When Working with Chinese International Students. Hongshan, welcome, and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, everyone. I'm very excited to be here and just pass my oral comprehensive exam. So I'm Hongshan. I'm currently the third year doctoral student in counselor education at Penn State. So a little bit about my background. I gained my clinical mental health master degree from University of Missouri, St. Louis. This is the place we met Dr. H, right? So my research interest is similar to Dr. I. It's career development and counseling of Asian population and Asian international students. Also cross-cultural counseling, training and supervision, some work on multicultural and social justice advocacy. Yeah. It's kind of all over the place, but basically focused on the Asian international students population. And very glad to be here with you all.
Well, I'm afraid you might have learned all over the place from me, because I've always struggled with that too. So one of the things I love when I read an article and it just sort of surprises me from the beginning, but being someone from the United States and working in higher ed here, in the very first paragraph of your article, Hongshan, you tell us that 35% of all students in the United States come from China, all international students in the United States. And that's really what I wanted to bring the two of you on today. Both of you are at slightly different stages in your journey from international student to professor, I think for both of you. I'd like for you each just to share your journey. I don't know who would like to go first, but like thinking about what were your interests in when you were in China, and and how it is that you made the decision to apply to and attend. I know that University of Missouri St. Louis, where I was your first university here. What was that like for each of you? And I'm doing that counselor thing where I don't be directive. My mistake. Hongxian, why don't you go first?
Okay, that's an interesting story. So in China, I was majored in psychology in my undergraduate program. Then consider about graduate school. At that time, I have a very limited knowledge. I thought I just really don't want to do the research. I want to do something more towards the publication. So that's why I applied my master program. I just think I was brave at that time because I know nothing about the program. I even don't know we have the 600 internship requirement. But I just
the 600 hours. You didn't even know that you'd have to practice in the United States as a counselor.
Yeah, I don't know any speaking English in that way. It's still very impressive for me when I have my first class with doctor. That's also my first class in the United States. I even don't understand an assignment. Mm-hmm. That's where I came from. I always talk about University of Missouri St. Louis until now with my cohort because I got the great support from the faculty and the cohort that without them, I couldn't be here today. And we have the very supportive, awesome faculty members. I always schedule meeting with them to get help and figure out where and what's my professional identity, what this career looks like for me. So yeah, it's a long journey.
Yeah. And I think an important element of that that we might not think about as counselors in the United States is the information difference, right? It may be not clear information. It may be information that's culturally different, or it may be just that you don't have access to information and then you just arrive at a university and have a class with me. What was that experience like for you, the decision-making process to come to the U.S. and selecting a university?
Thanks for that question. I feel like maybe every international student, you know, may have this type of story, like can be complicated, can be interesting, can be long. So for me is that I got my master in higher education from a Chinese institution, Wuhan University. Oh, right now it's like 10, 12 years ago. So after that, I worked as a college counselor in a Wuhan University. But I mean, that's the name I give to it. But actually, there's no position actually called college counselor back then. So when I was working in that position, you know, we had a lot of interaction with students in terms of their academic needs, career needs, also social emotional needs. But every time I talk to them, I feel like a sort of like a counseling session, but not that official or professional. So the thing that I take was, I believe most of my students, they took my words very, very seriously. Like sometimes I don't even know what I'm talking about, but they just listen to me because you're the teacher, right? So I'm listening to you. Then I feel like my words could be really impactful and powerful to some of my students, but I'm not professional enough. And that's when I start to think like, maybe there is something that I can learn more to, you know, help me better serve my students. Back then I thought in China. And then I Baidu in China, like Chinese Google, and learned that counseling profession in the US has probably one of the longest history in the world. So I was like, let me Google something. And then ended up with University of Missouri, St. Louis, where, you know, the counseling program is really strong, especially for career counseling area. It's really strong. We have great professors like Dr. H, Dr. Mark Pope, a lot. I mean, I'm not going to name everyone, but they're awesome professors. And I still remember my first year studying in the U.S. Wow, that was really, wow. I was like, that year was really, really difficult. Very, very challenging. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the thing I remember, because I met both of you very soon after your arrival, is my surprise at your surprise. So both of you had surprises upon arriving at UMSL. I want to sort of drill in a little bit on your story about that transition. Like I'm picturing both of you landing at Lambert International Airport in St. Louis, which is not a very large or nice airport back then, and like finding housing and registering for classes and just understanding how to get started with so little sort of knowledge, cultural knowledge of what's happening in the United States. Anyone want to share that part of the experience, your arrival experience almost?
Yes, to me, I feel like, I mean, right before flying into the US, I think getting things sorted out that's important. First of all, how to get a passport and how to apply for a visa and how to buy the ticket. And back then it was like, oh, that ticket is so expensive, like $2,500. So I was like, that's insane. Like, I mean, a lot of surprises and also with a lot of, you know, huge excitement. So I remember that day when I was arriving in Lambert International Airport, my first impression was, where are people? There's no people around. I think that's the first like very big difference versus US, especially Midwest to China. Mm-hmm. And then I think the first thing for me is to get to know how to survive. Mm. And where I can get my food, where I can get my favorite, like Chinese food, how to get a car plate, how to buy a car, how to pay my bill, how to pay my rent, and all these small things. I feel like I'm like a baby. I have to start to learn from the scratch because I have no idea. One thing I want to share a little bit more is that when I talk over the phone in my first year, just for paying my bill, I cannot understand that representative very well. Over the phone, I thought my English was okay, but it's really difficult to understand. So a lot of surprises like this in my journey.
If I can, I'll ask Hung Shan the same question. Like, how long before your first day of classes did you have to figure all those things out? Like, you arrived how many days before classes started? Do you remember?
I think I'm here 2 weeks early because we have an international student orientation. Mm-hmm. So it still take a little bit more time because I don't know how to register a class, which department should I go to? Because at that time, most of international students are undergraduate. And you know, we are in South Campus, which most of them are in North Campus, trying to figure out all those buildings. And also Dr. I said the phone call, I just feel comfortable about phone call until my doctoral program. So I will go to visit that, talk to them face to face instead of phone call because I couldn't really understand that. I just try to avoid calling people until nowadays.
Yeah. Hung Shan, like thinking about things like housing and like, is all of that planned ahead of time? And, or is a lot of like turning on the lights or making sure there's water, you know, finding the store, finding transportation. That's just, it's got to be so stressful.
No, the only thing I'm ready is the housing before I came. Okay. So I didn't have a car at that time. And I don't know why I even didn't have the idea about Uber or Lyft. So basically, I just take the school bus to supermarket, like grocery shopping, but then walk like 10 minutes because I'm not live on campus. So a lot of confusion and trying to figure out all of the things. And also another part, I really concern about my safety because for the style, we usually finish class at 8, so it's getting dark. There's no people on the road. Even windy day make me feel scared because I know nothing. So later, I just bought my fourth car during that time. Yeah. A lot of adjustment and also language issue. That's a big challenge at that time for me.
Yeah, I want to pick up on the language, but one of the things that I've learned from working with the two of you and so many other people from other countries is the perception of safety and security in the United States, I think, is much lower than United States citizens think it is. So I think many people from other nations don't perceive this as a safe country to navigate as much as residents that grew up in the United States might think it is. And how does that impact the way that we work with international students as they transition to our programs in the US? Young, now, if I remember correctly from your dissertation study, language, and I can't remember the right terminology right now, but like language self-efficacy or language development is a huge part of career development and transitions. Could you talk a little bit about the research on how language impacts this process?
Yes. So based on my dissertation's findings, the conclusion that I found was the better English language proficiency that an Asian international student has normally is possibly associated higher scores on their career decision-making self-advocacy. That means better English language proficiency, students with that tend to be having more positive career outcomes.
Mm-hmm. I guess my question about that is that coming, you know, there's two sides to that equation, right? So one is the individual, the international student's language proficiency being higher before they come to the United States. But I'm also thinking on the receiving end, we in the United States could do more to aid in that transition and getting students off to a better start, given that English is not their native language. What are some things, and I'll open this to either of you, what are some things that universities can do to make that entry experience, that transition experience, better, both emotionally, you know, for international students from Asia and specifically from China, but also as a practical matter of part of their career development is that transition into education? What might we do to get better?
So for me, I think in US universities or colleges, already there are many great resources there to support, you know, international students. But one thing I found really useful for me and maybe for some of my peers is that always put the words into a writing format when communicating with them. For example, if a career counselor is working with an international student, especially on their first few years after a session. So culturally wise, sometimes students may say, oh, yes, I got it. But maybe they're not fully understand. They thought they understood, but the reality was not. So with that, I mean, after the session, if the career advisors or career counselors can send a follow-up email to that student, kind of just recap everything happened in their session, also listed all these important informations for them to be sure they can read. Because when reading, we can take our time, you know, to read, to process it, to better understand. And then I think that always something can be really helpful. For those students who just entered the US.
Is part of the usefulness of that not only reading, but if you have a document to be able to use electronic translation applications, is that a part of it as well?
Yeah, like Google Translate, right? Google Translate is the app, I think, you know, not always accurate, but that helps, especially when the verbal conversations are happening. If you see that, you know, international has, you know, some difficulties in understanding, maybe that's the thing that you can use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hongxian, what do you think? Are there other improvements or things that we could do working as career development professionals or as institutions to help with this transition time?
That's a great question, because I'm currently the career counseling graduate assistant at Penn State Career Service, so I can speak for me and my client experience. Another thing is addressing their other challenges and adjustment issues. Even they come here for a career questions, but they are new here, you can see a lot of stress related to coursework and the United States system and the knowledge about the job market and application, what's the timeline. Mm-hmm. They don't know those things. So you can see the pressure and the emotional moments towards. So I really can give some space for them to process. And I think personally have great reality. If we have bilingual counselors, you can speak, like even I do some Chinese session with my client. One more thing is visualization. If I share some resources, I will use laptop to show to my client directly so they can get the idea, do the further research. And I think translation, some apps will help, but I always encourage them to practice English, because that's the environment you want to get a job, get an internship here. It's just maybe you need to come out of your comfort zone a little bit.
Two things I'd like to pull from these excellent suggestions that I think would have helped me serve both of you better. So one is what are some of the things we can do to support exactly what you just said, Hongshan, which is encouraging international students to find spaces to participate in English language discussions, or maybe even culture if that's not their first language. What would be a productive way for either of you to approach that first task? Then I want to talk about the emotional part of the transition a little bit as well. How can we encourage that? And particularly me, as someone from the West, it's hard for me to feel comfortable. I remember, Hongshan, you and I having conversations, like trying to encourage you to embrace that, but then feeling like I didn't have the competency or the knowledge to be the one to encourage that.
That's a good question, because I usually do that because we share the same culture. I identify as an international student as well. I don't feel any challenges to encourage them doing these things. But it's good to hear from that. I think maybe it's just help them trying to understand more. Even I can say that can help you have a better understanding about your coursework, right? Mm-hmm. Don't afraid of making mistakes. When you practice more, you can feel more comfortable. So usually they said, my classmates may not have patience to listen to me. So I just encourage them, go to some international organizations on campus. There are multiple ways, or there are some groups in your own majors. When I just came here, you know, you and my she build as a group. So I just keep going that monthly meeting, talk with them. Yeah, sometimes people may not understand me. They may only understand half and half. So just continue talking. They will correct you and tell you how to describe that. So that's the way you can learn from them. And one more thing is based on the major. If that came from a STEM major or more technical field major, we don't have very high requirement to use that like a day-to-day base, but how can you communicate with your employer or any settings? That shouldn't be a problem for you, right? That we can remove the barriers.
Yeah. Dr. I, would one strategy, just thinking out loud, like is putting out a lot of invitations to like social events and community events and program events, does that open the door more for international students, Chinese international students to come and get that practice? Or is that more, I guess I would wonder, is that intimidating from the start or is that welcoming? I'd love to hear your perspective on that.
I mean, that's a really good question. To me, I feel like it can be working, but sometimes may not. So I will say it's better than nothing, right? So because, you know, we always have a certain percentage of international students would like to see those opportunities. And they see those as opportunities for them to practice, getting to know people, and to network as well. But I mean, for some students, they just, I don't really care. No matter what, I just stay at home in my comfort zone. So I feel like those opportunities are definitely important. But I mean, sometimes it really depends on the students. Yeah.
And thank you for that response. One of the things I do in a lot of my classes and groups is the oops and ouch rule, where we might say something and then in second thought, would want to have said it differently. And I think I just had an oops moment, right? Because we so tend to overgeneralize student experiences. So we want to lump all Asian students together when they're very diverse, depending on their culture, ethnicity, and nation of origin. But personality factors still play a part, and life structure factors still play a part. So trying to do that, would students like to be invited or not? Of course, that's not a specific one-size-fits-all approach. I'm really thinking this is because we all went to counseling programs here on this particular call, but you know, the emotional toll of this transition, grad school is already a high anxiety transition event. So to be doing it as an international student and then making this cultural transition so close to it, and many of us not understanding, including myself, Chinese culture when it comes to counseling, to talking about frustrations and emotions, to, you know, I think in the United States, US-based students often feel more comfortable talking about personal things to faculty than maybe Chinese students or students from other countries might. How do I, as an instructor or a career counselor or an administrator, how do I think about paying attention to the emotional side of this difficult transition?
So I think part of the Chinese culture, I will say, is the hierarchy culture. Mm-hmm. And also from the traditional Chinese perspective, that teachers are those people who had power and who need to be highly respected. And I mean, traditionally, they're not saying anything wrong, and we should always listen to them. And also sometimes you can find that sometimes it's really hard to challenge them in a way. So I think part of that culture plays in a role when international students here, when they're interacting with their professors. So they take that piece of culture in the US. That's why sometimes maybe we don't know is it appropriate to share our personal things or emotional moments with our professors. And they're professors, why tell them that, right? So they need to only focus on academic parts. Mm-hmm. So for me, I feel like because that kind of culture differences, one thing might be helpful is that professors, you know, can be more proactive, invite international students for those type of conversations. And I will say that if you try once or twice, you can see the level of comfortableness is right there. And then they know, oh, we can talk about this with you. That's really nice, right? So yeah, that's just one thing I want to share.
Yeah, thank you so much. Hongshan, anything from you?
I really resonate when I'm working with Chinese international students, like in career service setting, when they talk about career, they will share their struggles with me. Like it's either be family pressure or going to industry or go to the academia, there are emotional things. But when I recommend them to use like CCAPS counseling centers, they will say, oh, I'm good. I just need a person to talk. After talking with you, I feel really good. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. So I think for me, just give them more space in, if that's a career counseling, right? We are not only talk about your resume, your cover letter, we are also give you the space to process those things. Sometimes I will do a little bit self-disclosure, maybe as an instructor as well. Maybe I can start with some emotional words or emotional sentence, just invite the student to talk with you. And a little bit psychoeducation piece as well. There could be some stigma, but we will show, like, even you go to the career counseling, you still are a normal person. Right. So even in counseling settings, they need that psychoeducation. The counselor is not in a teacher's role. That's the thing they need to learn as well to help themselves.
Well, that reminds me of what Yang was saying, is that he had the role of a college counselor, but it wasn't thought about in that way. It wasn't the same understanding of that role that you might have with a college or a career counselor at a place in the United States. I was working with a doctoral student running a group last week, and she had the best sort of icebreaker intervention. And I kind of want to like use it with the two of you right now. And so she asked the group for them to get to know each other, what is the single greatest kindness from a stranger that you have ever experienced? And so I'd like to change that a little bit. As you were transitioning as an international student from China to the United States, what is the single greatest kindness that you received from someone that helped you with that transition?
Definitely from Dr. H, but maybe this time I don't mention him again. I just say she's still my best American friend here. It's Grace. We are start our counseling program at the same time. So I just sit after her. So after self-introduction in our break, she just turned out to me, said, oh, welcome. So if you have any question, if you need any help, she just read down her phone number to me. I just feel, that's so great. So she definitely helped me a lot to adjust American culture. And in the 3 years of my master program, she also called me, okay, hang out with me, we will have meetings. So that's super helpful. That kindness helped me adjust to this culture. So still nowadays, I always share with my cohorts, as I have the best mentor and friends from AMSO.
Mm-hmm. I should have gotten UMSL to sponsor this podcast. We're doing like a great commercial for them. UMSL, by the way, just in case, is University of Missouri, St. Louis, where the three of us met. Yang, do you have a greatest kindness in your transition?
You know, while Hongshan was talking, I was thinking single, or I do have a lot. Now I'm trying to ranking, but it doesn't work. So I'm sharing more general, probably, like, mm-hmm, for those moments that I feel good, right? So I think I really enjoy that kind of space that no matter, you know, who they are, creative for me, for that space and moment that I can be my genuine self. I can embrace my identities as a Chinese international student or faculty who I am. And also that person knows something about China. And we have some really fun, interesting, mutual respect conversations. I mean, that's always the moments that I really enjoy. I definitely have a lot with Dr. H, but I mean, that's something I feel like I am being valued, I'm being respected, and I can be myself in a country other than my home country.
So first of all, when a Chinese international student finishes a degree program at the United States of any level, what are some of the factors to consider when they decide what to do as a next step in their career? And here I'm thinking maybe go back home, attempt to stay in the United States, and thinking about sort of job market possibilities as an international student.
Yeah, so basically, I will say that normally people have probably three, but maybe more options after graduation. One is to go back to their home country directly after graduation. And in that case, they probably started to looking for jobs right before their graduation, because they want that transition as smooth. The second option is to stay here, but they also have different options underneath this one. One is that because for international students, we can either have 1 year PTO or 3 years if you're a stat major. So some people, they don't want to stay in the US forever after graduation, but they do prefer to get some sort of work experiences in the US, because many, like, you know, China-based companies, especially for business companies, they do value those type of experiences. Working in the US in a company in English for a few years, because they have those global vision and skills to be able to better serve their company. So that can be one main option for many international students. The other one is like someone probably want to stay after for a while to apply for a green card, but maybe one day after like 10 years, something that, oh, it's a time to go back. I would say basically for those three options, to my understanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, Hengshan, what type of journey do you see yourself on now? You're about to graduate with a doctorate in counselor education and supervision. What's in the future for you? What would you like to do?
That's a good question. And it's definitely a lot of career decision-making process in my mind. Definitely, I received great education, professional training in my doctoral program. But since I plan to graduate in 3 years, am I really confident to work as a faculty member? So is there any actual training I want to receive or mentorship right in my position? And another issue is professional development. I'm kind of here and I'm familiar with the job market of counselor education in academia in United States. To be honest, I know nothing about that in China. I don't know what a faculty position in China looks like, because it's kind of combination with psychology and counseling together. But here we have a different system. That's the consideration. So that's why I plan to find a job here now to promote further my professional development. But there are also some other factors, such as belongings, your family members, right? I'm here far from my family, my parents. And it could be loneliness, especially for last year, the pandemic happens. That's a very strong feelings. I think not only me, maybe for many international students. Based on my experience, what I know, many people decide to return to China due to the pandemic. It could be limited working experience and the environment, right? In China right now, you don't have to wear your masks everywhere. So that could be, and how that affects the economic right now. It's different factors. It's hard to say there is the best choice. Either way, you have to give up something. You will pursue something.
Yeah. In some ways, it's a classic career decision-making problem that we all help clients with all the time. But there is definitely more complexity because of being an international student. Dr. Ai, what does the future look like for you?
You know what? I really enjoy my current job as assistant professor. It's really good. I mean, it's my dream job, the work-life balance. I mean, if we have, yes, we do have. So, and all that. So, and California, you know, so yeah. My plan is that to still pursue my career goals and at the same time trying to enjoy my life in the US with my three kids and my family as well.
Great. It sort of feels like a family reunion to have both of you on the episode. I think, you know, this is a really good beginning conversation to a problem that I think the pandemic is changing. We know that before the pandemic, the politics towards international students and immigration changed pretty dramatically in the United States. We know that the pandemic has people reconsidering educational and career pathways. And we're already starting to see a trend where students from the Asia Pacific region, particularly China, are looking at other educational hubs now instead of the United States. And we're so early in some of these transitions. Some of them are other Western educational hubs like Canada, the United Kingdom. But of course, we're starting to see educational hubs in Asia now as well that students may be more attracted to. So I think that both of you are going to have lots of research and work to do in this area throughout your careers and your lives. And of course, you're always going to be having me in the background cheering you along the way as you do that. So it is with the deepest gratitude and the greatest pride that I was able to host both of you today. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for this talking opportunity.
Well, I'm going to get a little emotional now, but this is Dr. Brian Hutchison, the host of Behind the Science of Career Development. Thank you so much for tuning in and look for our next episode in December. Until next time, be well.